is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
All right, another episode of the PT Pintcast. They say the best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. Talking dry needling today, and we're talking with some experts, Ado Zylstra, Sasha Diggs, and Nelson. Nelson Mint. Guys, welcome to the show, and what are we drinking?
Two fingers of Stranahan's.
Okay. Sasha?
Ditto.
Seth?
Michelob Ultra.
Watching the calories, and I'm going fat tire. It's Ultra.
That's the man of the group.
So we're talking dry needling. You guys are right in the middle of a Kineticore course. You guys do 3-day courses. You guys doing functional dry needling this weekend. You guys nice enough to let me come and just kind of be a fly on the wall. Nelson was nice enough to last year let me audit a course. And as a student, it really kind of opened my eyes as to, man, I got to pay attention to anatomy and I got to pay attention to neuro. The stuff actually comes up again. Pay attention to that stuff when it's early on in PT school because it's going to come back up. Let's start with Ada. What's your background with dry needling? Regis University in Denver for your master's and your DPT, and you opened up Kineticare in 05, and then in the early 2000s started doing dry needling. So what's your background in PT and just using dry needling in general?
Very lucky, actually, to have been offered a job at a clinic. It was actually a physician-owned clinic at the time called Therapeutic Management Incorporated. I spent 4.5 years there. Very fortunate to have worked in a practice that actually thought outside the box and actually worked to bring physical therapists and their knowledge and the physician with an integrative spinal model of treatment so that we could give the best outcomes to the patient. So for me, dry needling exposure happened day one. I've always been interested in...
And this is early 2000s.
Yeah, this was January 2001. Day one, I'm seeing it happen in the clinic, fascinated, very excited at the fact that I get to utilize a technique that, or at least learn a technique and then utilize in my practice that had an association with acupuncture that I researched and had a fascination with early on, but learned very quickly that acupuncture and dry needling were very, very different in that the physical therapist is someone that treats movement. That is really our foundation. And then everything else comes from that foundation. That is, you know, neuro, biomechanics, tissue pathology, and then of course anatomy and physiology,
yeah,
which you've learned in the last couple of days, and hopefully from your experience with Nelson, that is something you have to know and you will learn the rest of your life. First kind of apprenticed under Dr. Centeno and then the other PTs in the clinic, and then went to Canada to get official training, probably about 5 to 6 months into that.
Was that the only place it was being done, or you just went to
Canada? No, well, so at the time, before I was trained, there was only 5 or 6 PTs in the U.S. actually doing dry needling, which is pretty phenomenal when you think about it. Because right now, we're probably in the range of about 5,000 PTs doing it. And I would have to say, you know, in a very prideful sense, I suppose, that we've trained, oh man, a good number of them. I wouldn't know exact numbers, but it's upwards of 60 to 80% of many of the U.S. trained. Now, of course, that's arguable. But I know we've trained quite a few. Our numbers show that we've trained over 4,000. So
I've noticed that some of the other companies out there, their instructors are trained by you guys.
Yeah, we take some pride in that, to be honest. These are some of our distinguished alumni, some of the people that have learned it, loved it, decided, you know what, they want to do it on their own,
and teach
their
it.
Own thing, and teach it. And the way I look at it is there's plenty of patients to go around. There's plenty of physical therapists to learn it. But, you know, obviously we're very biased. We think our model is the best. And we continue to grow in our model in that we're not just teaching the same thing we taught way back when. We're progressive. We are modifying the techniques to patient comfort, to success with regards to patients, to utilizing electric stimulation as a way to reduce soreness, to increase efficacy, to actually reduce the amount of needles we're actually putting in patients, to become the sniper versus the carpet bomber.
It's got to be good when you have that many students come through and when you teach as many courses, you can start to do that. You can see what you can find. You're essentially creating best practices.
Absolutely. And, you know, our view has always been based on a foundation of safety first, always safety first. And that if you look at our courses, we have such a high ratio of instructors to students, which helps with supervision because you have to have supervision with this. We focus on the didactic of safety and reviewing what you learned in PT school with regards to universal precautions and how to prevent the bad outcome. Also, having the two-course technical model where we have the FDN1, Functional Dry Needling 1, and Functional Dry Needling 2, that is our technical training where you learn the muscles of the body, and the introductory level 1 course is... it's a safety model. It's learn safety, learn the muscles that are much less risky. Once you get experience, once you have some practice, then you come back and you take the FDN2 technical course, which then gives you the rest of the muscles that we deem one appropriate for a physical therapist to treat in a safe manner. And then we have our clinical side where we have the functional therapeutics, and that's the course we're teaching this weekend. And that, for us, is incredibly fun and fascinating because it changes based on not only our experience and progression with it, but also the clinicians that we're training and what they bring to the table and the questions they have. We have a physician this weekend that's taking it, and he's really challenged us in many ways and also given us really good things to think about because he's looking at it from the physician's perspective and does not understand the physiotherapist's training and abilities. And I think he is seeing this is such a great partnership that we can have as physiotherapists and physicians working for the betterment of improving healthcare for these patients. And then we have our advanced course that's being progressed into a 3-day course and is really fascinating and amazing. And it's based on a lot of research. Nelson's been a real big part of the science on that, but I've been kind of the art side where, you know, I feel very comfortable sticking needles pretty much anywhere, so long as I know the anatomy and the risks and rewards, so to speak. So yeah, you know, I started off being the low man on the totem pole, or actually the high man on the totem pole, if you really want to be correct with regards to totem poles.
Which we always want to maintain on the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hierarchy of totem poles.
Hierarchy. But, you know, I started there and just fell in love with this technique because I saw the results. And the results were patients were, first, it was all about pain. You know, pain control and, you know, this trigger point model of, hey, we can reduce your pain very quickly and then get you progressed, hopefully, into more active lifestyle and mobility and less, you know, pain meds and less interventional care, which we were working with an interventional spine doc. So we were literally taking business away from him, which he was happy about because the patients that didn't respond well then were appropriate for the interventional techniques. And then we still were there to manage them as the rehab component, which was, to me, the perfect setting. I went from the training of being kind of an apprentice to going to Canada to get trained under Dr. Gunn and the IMS model, which is intramuscular stimulation. Practiced that for a couple of years, and then I went through what was called the Time, Pain, and Rehab, which is now Mild Pain Seminars, and that is more of the trigger point model that was right out of the camp of Janet Travell and Dave Simons, which is phenomenal work that they've done. But that was an injection-based model initially. But then they moved to the dry needle, in a sense, or these solid fine filament needles because it was less damaging to the tissue, it was more comfortable to the patient, and we weren't injecting anything.
Right.
So we're using these needles that, you know, are at times as thin as a hair, but can really impact the neuromuscular system.
So for some students or some new grads or PTs are out there thinking about it, talk about the needle just for a second. Because when I hear needle, I used to have such an aversion to needles. I was scared. My personal story was I was doing my shadowing hours before I could apply to PT school, and the PT there was like, oh, your calf issue, that won't go away. I got this thing I could try. And only because it was on my calf and I was face down that I would let her do it, so I didn't have to watch.
Yeah.
And when I was done, I was like, that was it. It felt good.
Yeah.
It was
therapeutic.
I was waiting for the pain.
Yeah, exactly.
It didn't show up.
Well, and that's just it too. And you know, even in the injection world, there are techniques to make that more comfortable.
Right.
And you see physicians actually having a kinder, gentler way of approaching things. The old school technique for a lot of things was just like, suck it up and,
hammer.
You know, I got to do this. But these needles are very different. They're solid. They're cone-shaped, very sharp. They separate the tissue. They don't cut through it, whereas a beveled-edged syringe has a hole in it, and it's there to deliver or remove a fluid. It's very different in that. And we have many patients that say the same thing where, you know, I really don't like needles. My comment to that is I'd be concerned if you actually did
needles.
You know, because then I start to question, you know, maybe recreational things. But the needle itself, when done properly, you barely feel a thing when it enters the body. And in actuality, you don't really feel much unless you put it into a dysfunctional tissue. And that's what's awesome. That becomes the goal of what we're trying to do as clinicians, is be the sniper, be the guy who can stick a needle in the spot that is really affecting, back in the day in the trigger point model, more of the pain pattern, and now more of the functional movement or movement dysfunction that is causing the pain. For us, treating the what of what the patient is coming to see you for, even though that's important, we still need to address that. It's the why. Why are they in pain? Why are they, you know, struggling through this? Because they're not going to come in and tell you, you know, I have a restricted L5-S1 facet joint on the right.
It'd be great if they did, though. Make my job easier.
Yeah, but does it matter? Does that actually, you know, is that a normal? You know, and that's just it. Is a trigger point actually a normal? It's just a calibration piece. And this is something that I think Nelson could even speak on with regard to some of the science behind it, that the trigger point has always been demonized. Kind of like the piriformis. Piriformis is an evil muscle. It should not exist. I think that's not fair. I think the piriformis is a lovely muscle, and it can't do what, you know, what people think to the SI joint. There are other muscles that are probably worse to have in our body, but they're all there for a purpose, right? You know, with regards to dry needling, it's a great tool. And it's a tool that, you know, a lot of people we hear say, you know, it's that shiny hammer that never loses its shine. As you get better and better and more experienced, your outcomes improve. And the patients actually, for me, it drives business. It's simple. You know, it's another tool to reset function of the body so that we can then attain our goals. And those goals being proper movement, proper stability, proper mobility, the ability to actually function with it, with less pain.
So on that note, do you guys want to go around the room and just kind of tell maybe an example of a time you used it? It was a good example of getting a positive result with dry needling.
Oh, yeah. You know, we all have our own patient stories, but it's when we're in the classroom, we have PTs that understand more than the conventional patient. We have our PTs that are trained and they know the different techniques and the different techniques we can do. Manipulation, soft tissue, with all the various brand names on it. When they get off that table and they're just absolutely stunned at how impactful, how fast and how...
It happened yesterday. It was a couple of PTs who got off the table and said, wow, I haven't had... That didn't feel that way in a while.
Absolutely right. People with revelations, you know, I haven't been able to squat down like that in years. I haven't been able to... Well, actually, ever since my surgery. And these revelations are just so rewarding that we're teaching this technique that's that impactful for people that have just as much experience, if not more. I think that's the biggest eye-opener for me when our students are sharing these success stories while they're happening.
And a couple happened yesterday during the functional dry needling course, because the students work on each other.
Yes, perform. That's correct.
And one of the PTs got off the table, female, and she was like, that hasn't felt pain-free in a long, long time. She's going to walk out of there, and she's going to walk into her clinic on Monday, and she's going to be excited to pick out patients to use it on.
That's absolutely right, Jimmy.
What do you got, Sasha? Good example of dry needling?
Well, case in point, as a personal story, I sustained a calf injury being a age group triathlete that with conventional physical therapy after 3 months would not cease having in both pain and restriction of movement. Was giving a speech up here in Northern Virginia, came across a colleague who practiced dry needling, became a table monkey, as we call it, just to donate my body to science. I was one of those people deathly afraid of needles. After 3 needles, my pain was reduced by approximately 75%, and I regained about 90% of my motion, was able to get off the table and walk away. I had told her point blank, if I had known that you'd had this technique, I would have driven the 2 hours to come see you to get this treatment prior to a race that I had to walk a half marathon. So when I feel that as a clinician who understands how the body can heal and was amazed on how rapidly the change happened to myself, I realized the impact that I could have as a clinician on both people that have major restrictions to people that have minor restrictions with ADLs, and the impact you can give them their life back. It's life-changing.
Well, you know, it's funny. I like being, I guess, last in commenting, because for me, it's interesting to hear the comment from Nelson on the students, because that's really the selling point. You know, the patients, they'll be sold. You know, we're good at that. You build rapport. And the rapport is such that many of these people that learn it for the first time, they have patients already waiting for them to do it, and they trust them, and that's awesome. But to literally see, particularly with this kind of this focus that we have in our courses, where we're looking at the neurologic piece of change or of assessment. So looking at a myotomal change. And I will tell you, I got to be an example today as well, but I'll take myself off the table and throw another clinician from this weekend who today, after having a hip surgery 8 years ago, says, I felt weak in my hip flexion. I, after a mile with my kids, you know, jogging with the stroller or whatever, I had to stop. I just couldn't keep up. She said, I haven't had this kind of strength in my hip for over 8 years because she had surgery. I mean, prior to that, she was having lots of problems. And you even wonder if that surgery was necessary. I'm not going to judge that because we don't know. We weren't there. But what it does tell me is, boy, we've got to be careful making big assumptions about what we can't do if we're not fully assessing the why behind what's going on and then treating that, we'll never know. And so going into that neurologic level of assessment, which I think is the most beautiful piece of what we're doing in our courses now. We do a myotomal assessment and you can literally assess it and you find, you know what, this is a peripheral nerve or it's a segmental issue, more of a central lesion. You treat that and reassess it and it's significantly better. And we're not talking like, yeah, that might be better. We're talking, holy crap, I can tell that's better.
Aha moment.
It's an aha. And I had that today just again, and I've had these numerous times just throughout my career, needling myself, having colleagues needle me, you know, those types of things, but also seeing it throughout the room. And I think we've had more aha moments in the last couple of months because we've focused more on this foundational neurologic piece prior to movement. Because I think movement, obviously, we need to know how to evaluate movement, but having that foundation of the nervous system, and we all hated, let me just take that back. Yeah. I really struggled with the neuro piece because in school we were separated at times. You know, okay, you're going to be more inpatient because you like this kind of thing. Or, you know, you're going to be the neuro person, so you're going to be dealing with patients with CP or stroke or this or that. And then when you have the ortho, you can't do that. We are neuroorthopedists. Now, you may have neuroorthopedists that actually have a neuro emphasis and they work in that region, but they have orthopedic problems they need to address. And then you have the orthos who, and I think it's more the orthos that have the problem, they forget that the nervous system is actually the biggest player here. And we need to be better at assessing this. And that to me is the challenge I have every single day. How can we be better? How can I figure out why so that two needles instead of 20, you know, 5 years ago, has even a better response. And then adding electric stim and positional changes and the proper correctives, now we're actually reducing visits. And I hope, you know, we have every insurance company listen to this because the insurance companies are now challenging us because they don't want to spend money on this.
Sure.
They don't think that physical therapy is helpful. For many years, you know, we were benign, doing no good, doing no harm. Hey, guess what? We can do some harm, but we can do a whole lot of good as well. And that's what's exciting to me. The good we do outweighs the harm by a thousandfold. You know, having this ability for us to teach, we all have a passion. If you were to spend time with all of the instructors that we have, every weekend you have different instructors, you're going to see the same model. These people are passionate, they're humble, and this is an amazing created body that's like, oh wow, holy cow. We have the pleasure and the privilege to treat this human body rather than you come to me because I'm the best.
Right.
No, it's our privilege.
That was something that I noticed taking the auditing course last year and looking at it yesterday. Same thing, somebody would ask a question. Someone like Nelson would say, what do you think about this, Sasha? And you guys would refer to each other because as a collective of instructors, you've got a lot of experience, but you're also going to see a lot of different things. You know, bring that together in that kind of course.
Yeah.
I graduate in less than a year. I've been exposed to dry needling both as a patient, auditing a course. Are they state regulations? How can I take it? Why should I take it as I look forward to graduate?
You know, being a part of the APTA task force, being part of the FSBPT task force on dry needling, being involved with a number of states and their battles to get acceptance of this because, like I said before, we started at, you know, 5 to 6 therapists now. I was the 7th, I think, in the U.S. that was officially trained to do it. And then we went to the state of Colorado and presented this, and they were the 5th state to allow this, and now we're up above 30 states mm-hmm. that allow it. That's pretty awesome. What they're seeing is that this is a natural part of our profession. It's a tool that really fits well with us. Even the Guide to Physical Therapy Practice has this as a part of it. There's a definition for it. There's a description. There's the model for it. And now hopefully we have a development of competency standards for training as well as practice so that people are still maintaining a safe practice as well as safe training. Now, Our standards for our company with regards to Kineticore is that we require at least a year of experience. Now, we do at times adjust that based on the experience of the student. Because let's say you came to my clinic, worked for 12 weeks with me. My expectation by the end of it is that you needle me by the end of it. You're not needling patients, but you're needling me. Because you've watched it, been somewhat forced or coerced or strongly, you know...
Suggested
that you educated. Take our courses and be educated. But it's a free education.
Sure,
you know?
Take it.
But you will be a demonstration model
table
rather
monkey.
Than table monkey, right? But you'll be that person that gets to experience that. And we may say, you know what, spend 6 to 8 months, you know, developing your clinical mm-hmm. practice. Because, you know, you can't come right out of school and learn this technique and be competent for one. I don't want you to take this tool because it is powerful. It is a very effective tool. And now you rely on that. You are a dry needler and that's all you are. You're a physical therapist first and foremost, which means you're a movement specialist. You need to understand differential diagnosis and know when to do what. Process of going through school is the right to become a physical therapist. You get your license, now you get to become a physical therapist. You take Con Ed, you get the clinical experience by spending time with patients and learning the practice patterns that go with that. That's a huge part of what you do. And hopefully you get mentorship with that. And you learn at times from having the good and sometimes bad outcomes. And I would say bad outcomes being, you know, you made someone sore or, you know, they got a little bit worse. But when we don't make a change, that's when we should be concerned, right? For the new grad, I'd say, you know, get some experience being a PT first. And then be a good consumer, you know, figure out what course you want to take. You know, as you stated before, you know, we've trained a lot of people and a lot of these people are now teaching the courses. Obviously, we're going to say, hey, come take our course. But I don't say that as a business model. I say that as take it from the people that have the most experience, the people that understand that they're not going to deviate from a standard of safety and competency and proper instruction and are literally going to push you hard and may fail you. If you don't show competency by the end of the weekend through practical testing and theoretical testing, you could fail and have to retake the course if you want to proceed in adding this to your practice.
But you got to do that, as you were stating before, because it's a safety issue. And that's what guys hammer home. I mean, when I audited the course last year, Nelson would just stop a student and say, where are you? Where are you right now?
Yeah.
And that was kind of universal amongst all the instructors. Where are you right now? What's in your head? So that was something that hammered home for me when I was able to watch.
Yeah.
You know, something that Ado clarify or didn't explain as well as we understand for the guys that work for him is in 09, Ado is one of the four guys that came up and wrote a resource paper to help explain to the PT boards when it came to a decision, should we add this in our practice act or not? Because that is regulated by the state board. Ado is one of the four guys that wrote that. You know, and currently he sits on the task force, FSBPT, that's coming up with the standardizations for what should be taught and what the accreditation should include. You know, that's where my decision stopped right there. You know, when I used to be that student. I used to be that student, and I went in, and it was just too powerful, too amazing. And he was such a good instructor, and I just had to be a part of his team. And then as I learned more about what he's done for our profession, quietly, that no one talks about, that he's done quietly in his spare time. I just had to be a part of it because I wanted to work for the guy that is making this part of the landscape in physical therapy. I'm sure I embarrassed him enough with all of that.
That's not why we do it.
That isn't why he does it. No. But I just wanted to explain.
Another great thing, not only does Ado teach colleagues from the United States on dry needling, but he's also a massive advocate who goes to different state boards and helps educate boards when making decisions on about whether dry needling should be a part of the practice act. And he does it as a thankless type of job, but the passion and advocacy that he presents with not only carries with the state boards, but also carries with education myself as a clinician and as colleagues as that come in and teach us on a weekend basis. So it's great to be a part of such an amazing team that not only affects here locally, but we're also doing something globally here, not only in the United States, but Kinetic Core also teaches in Canada as well, and it's overseas. So we're making a difference on how physiotherapy can make this change in people's lives throughout the world.
You know, we have the opportunity to do so much, and our vision and mission is about changing how physical therapy is seen in the U.S. You know, in Australia, the physiotherapist is considered a very high-level practitioner. And, you know, everyone has their physio. And in the U.S., it's all over the place.
Kind of an identity problem almost.
Oh,
here.
My goodness, yes. You know, but I just want to motivate people to go out there and do it. Make sure they do the right thing. I'm great, you know, with regards to consulting and methodology, because I can tell you what you shouldn't do and what you should do. You know, there's studies out there that...
Because you've seen a change ridiculous. Over the years.
Absolutely. I mean, but, you know, it comes down to the proper methodology. And I've had the chance to be a reviewer of studies as well, which is great. And I want to continue to be a part of this. But, you know, dry needling isn't everything. It is a passion of mine. But physical therapy is the first passion.
And that's just a component of it.
Oh, my goodness, yes. But as Nelson will tell you, it's a very powerful tool.
All right. Section of the show called Parting Shots, because we have a pint. And then we take a shot.
Oh.
So if you had a piece of advice that you could give yourself, either as a third-year student or maybe a new grad, what would you want to tell yourself?
Great question.
Dr. Osler said, if you listen to your patient long enough, they will actually tell you, inform you what their diagnosis is. That is truer now than it was when I first came out, because I had preconceived notions on what my patient had. If I just sit there with an open mind and let the patient speak to me, that is probably the biggest key as a clinician. Just sit there and listen. With an open mind, you will come to what is the best methodology and treatment strategy for that particular individual.
And that's good advice, because as a student who just went through his first clinical rotation, you're kind of out there, you're on your own. You get your CI looking over your shoulder, and you just want to do something, because you don't want to be doing nothing. You want to make sure that your CI thinks you're paying attention. So I guess listening would probably be, shut your mouth and listen a little bit more.
There's an Italian proverb that says, you have two ears and one mouth. You should listen twice, you must now speak. So, parting shot.
I like that.
So the more I'm learning, the more I learn, the more I realized, this is the second time I'm hearing this information. Because the first time was in PT school. I just didn't know how to put it into context. It was just not relevant. In PT school, it was about pass, survive, get to the next subject. What I would probably say to a PT student is, everything you need to know to be a good clinician, you learn in school. You just didn't apply it. Keep all those texts, notebooks, and all those study cards handy, because you're gonna get back to them. I had another third year student come to me the other day, and they're like, they wanted advice on where they should spend their last clinical affiliation. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was finishing up and I wanted to do my one last affiliation, I wanted to go to the biggest, busiest, most renowned clinic possible. And I didn't learn anything, because it was all about crunching. What I would say is, I'd go to a slower clinic, less patients, because I already know everything I need to do. I just need to have time to practice my art at that time. The schools took care of the science part. They took care of the science part more than you realize. And then the more you're a clinician, you just learn more and more things that they already taught you in school. What I think you should do as an intern, get to that slower clinic. Put that science in the art. Forget about that big, fast-paced, big-name, orthopedic, specialty clinic. Go to a good clinic and practice your art. That's what I would say.
That's good advice. I like that. But you're right. I had said that before. PT school, especially in your first year, year and a half, is survival mode. I mean, you're just trying to keep your head above water. And oh yeah, that stuff that you learned, for me, was like anatomy and neuroanatomy. That stuff comes back.
It comes back.
It's not just pass the test and bail. You got to know that stuff.
Everything we're doing this weekend, and Ado alluded to it, we decided to change the curriculum because the times, I mean, we're realizing that we need to keep up with the times, and this is just, we're just getting better results this way. And we're brandishing this out all spectacularly. But what we try to tell our participants is, we already done this in school. We're just reviewing this again.
Right, it's a review.
Yeah, absolutely right.
All right, parting shots, Ado.
I couldn't agree more with Sasha and Nelson. And what I wish I had, the one major thing, and this is because I have a passion for anatomy, is to take anatomy twice. Now, I took it like four times. I don't know what that says about my intelligence, but to be able to take it at the beginning to get the basis and the foundation and all of that. I loved anatomy lab. That was my favorite part. And you know, some people hate that smell. That smell reminds me of good things. Mm-hmm. But then to go back after you've had time to clinically apply the skills you learned in PT school and to go look at what you've been touching and treating and affecting, man, is that powerful. And I have the opportunity to go back in the anatomy lab like once a year going to UNLV because we teach there, and Louis Puentedera is awesome. He's a good friend of mine, and he's like, yeah, let's just go in the anatomy lab. We go in every day after we teach class. And the people that come to the UNLV class don't understand what they're getting because that's a whole like extra module they get for free. Like, it's cool, you know? And to be able to go in and see, you know, and this sounds terrible, but to see these old people that, you know, obviously they're not young usually when they're dead and they're cadavers, but to see their musculature and to see the interaction of the nervous system and the vascular system and just how everything works together. And what we forget about is the fascial system that we just want to get, you know, cut through and get out of the way so we can see all the cool stuff, right? It's so important for us to understand the interaction of those things. I would say you have the opportunity to go back in the anatomy lab. Do it. Especially now that you're still in school.
Right.
Go back and get in there as often as you can, because that will give you context. Because what are we doing but implying inputs on these things? Yeah, we can't see all the minutiae. Like, we can't see the receptors. We can't see, you know, all the other things that are going on, all the chemical processes. But we can see how things attach, how they interact,
how they relate,
and that it's not 2D. It's very three-dimensional. Mm-hmm. To me, that's huge. That to me is invaluable. Because, you know, all the con ed companies that are out there are just giving you tools that are refurbished at times or remanufactured or marketed a different way.
They're based on that anatomy.
Exactly.
The fundamentals.
And the fundamentals. And so it's cool to see all these other models. And me being a very osteopathically based PT, I love that model because it's very artistic and yet scientific. But you've got to find what works best for you.
Good advice. I like that. I want to thank you guys for letting me take a little piece of your brain in terms of dry needling, but in terms of where I could go in the field of PT, in terms of keeping my eyes open and paying attention and not forgetting the fundamentals.
All right. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for sharing a beer on the PT Pinecast, gentlemen.
Cheers.
Cool.
Like what you hear? Leave us a review on iTunes. It's not like our moms can keep giving us 5 stars every day. Or can they? The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.